Good morning, everyone. My name is Haywood, and I am an alcoholic. I am blown away by the numbers in this room. We're going to have fun this weekend, aren't we? I was so deeply honored to receive the letter from GSO inviting me to share with you today. My sobriety date is September 15th, 1966. Thank you. I'm just delighted to be here. My home group is the Kalamalka Group in Vernon, B.C. It's a retirement community. Most of the people in my group are about my age, which is more than retirement age. And I'm very emotional. And that's good. I remember so often, this will be my seventh international. My very first one was 1975 in Denver, Colorado. I saw all those people up there speaking and thought, my, they have something. Now that I'm here, I'm not so sure that I have. But I am sober. I want to start by giving a brief description of my life while drinking. I was in my early 20s, and partying became more than partying. My friends started to try and get rid of me because I wrecked their weekends. Besides, they were hunting girls, and I wasn't. Things happened. And I was shy when I wasn't drinking. There was just Dad and myself. I was an only child, and Mom had passed away when I was in high school. And they were older parents and were a little overprotective, et cetera, et cetera. The drinking became a serious matter. My boss didn't like it. He kept meeting me at the door at 8 o'clock in the morning to give me a list of things that needed to be done that day. I couldn't see his list. He was in the program, and my health was getting bad. Oh, and I went to a doctor. He referred me to a psychiatrist. I walked in. I dismissed the psychiatrist. He was wearing a polyester suit with a bow tie. He was absolutely dismissed, but he gave me some happy pills and said, don't drink so much, so I washed them down with booze. I got here a little faster. I was 26 years old and nowhere to go. Dad tried to get out of town as often as possible because and then he wondered if his house would be standing. It was kind of bad. And after that little episode with the boss, I told him one day I wasn't drinking. I hadn't drank for 3 days at that point. And he said, good, you can come to one of our meetings. I'm not that bad. I went to a meeting. It was very different. And people laughed. That's all I remember in that first month. People could laugh. I had lost the inability, I had a complete inability to laugh. Life was far too serious. I joined a group of old guys, not anywhere near as old as I am today. They were all working, they were around 50. Those old guys loved me back to health, and they gave me jobs to do in the group. I had a whole bunch of new friends. The old friends didn't want me anymore. I didn't have a house, and I didn't have money for them to booze with. One day I gave some of my buddies some money to go and get some booze for Sunday because there was no way of getting it on Sunday. Well, bootleggers were around. And they ate. They went to a restaurant and ate. And they came back to the house with 6 beer and I kicked them all out. Anyway, this staying sober bit was kind of working. I didn't like everything, and I was as crazy as they come at that point. And I want to recognize all the gay, lesbian, transgender, and queer who are here today. I will use the word gay. I'm not very good with all these letters. I'm going to talk a bit about the topic, and then finally I'll carry on with a bit of my story, a very, very important part of my story. But I want to look at our topic. Am I an alcoholic who is gay, or am I a gay alcoholic? My answer will be that I am an alcoholic who happens to be gay. And I'm going to talk a little bit about our traditions. Tradition 3. The only requirement for AA membership is a desire to stop drinking. And from the long form, we may refuse none who wish to recover. Any man or woman who has a drinking problem is a member of AA if they say so, not when we say so. The last quote is from Bill's address to the 1968 conference. At that time, he also discussed AA, I believe, number 3, who, my understanding is, was a gay man, and they had to talk about whether they'd let him in. And that was the result. Anyone? I want to look at tradition 5. Each group has but one primary purpose: to carry its message to the alcoholic who still suffers. Many of our groups, including mine, start each meeting by reading the blue card, Singleness of Purpose. The person suffering maybe those still drinking, or maybe the person next to them who is struggling with life while sitting in these rooms. The following is just my opinion. Life can be brutal. I need to keep my group a safe, welcoming place for all those coming through the doors. I found the additional safety I needed in the special interest group for gays. I believe strong sponsorship is the key to a safe group. Thank you. I had the opportunity in the last 18 months to conduct a workshop as part of my area commitment on safety in AA. And I believe the person is here today who helped me put the stuff together for that. And we looked at all of this. And we had an example in the room, because a person, I had mentioned that I was gay from as a moderator of that discussion, and someone said I shouldn't be there. He eventually left, and we did not take any action. We let him have his say. But we have to keep our meeting room safe for all who come. Sometimes they're a bit annoying, but I was that way. My partner says I'm still that way. And tradition six very briefly. We have to maintain that an AA group may cooperate with anyone but never affiliate with anyone. Our gay groups must maintain a distance from community activism. I can be very activist outside the rooms, even in the parking lot. But I don't want to carry that into the room. I don't know how that newcomer who's in the room is feeling about these things. I don't want to risk chasing that person away. That is just my opinion. I must also respect our anonymity as a group. And now I respect my own anonymity. At one time I used to tell anyone who would listen because I loved it. And I mentioned briefly a little bit about service. I had the utter pleasure in retirement of serving 2 years as treasurer of my area, Area 79, BC and Yukon in Canada. It was a wonderful experience. There's people here from the area, as several DCMs I've talked to this morning and past delegate. And it's given me so many contacts. My partner and I moved to BC from Alberta, from Calgary. 8 years ago, I didn't know anyone, and now I have a phone with a couple hundred contacts in it from all over the province. Isn't that wonderful about AA? Isn't it? The traditions I've just reviewed are the reasons that I begin sharing by saying my name is Haywood and I am an alcoholic. No qualifiers. But I urge all gay groups to have a GSR, to participate in district, not pull away. Thank you so much. If you don't know what a GSR is, get hold of a handbook and find out. Find out the duties. Go to a district, put up your hand at your business meeting and say, I'll go to district. It's an eye opener. I am a great defender of special interest groups. I would not likely be active in the program today if it hadn't have been that when I came out, I could go and find groups listed as gay fairly easily. There have been gay groups for many years. In Canada, my only knowledge is of the early time is Montreal and Vancouver, and I believe that the first groups there that labeled themselves gay were somewhere around 1972-73. I'm going by memory that it's sort of okay. I am 74. Now for a very important part, as I sort of wind down this, my coming out. 30 years ago, I was in Montreal. Some of you were the same weekend. And there were 3 gay meetings. I was going up the escalator in the Four Seasons Hotel to the first one. I had no idea what I was in for. Oh, yeah, I kind of did, because I was in New Orleans, had been one, and I'd sat in the back row. I came 5 minutes late, sat in the back row, and the moment it was over, I was gone, because no one on our charter needed to know, because I wasn't accepting that I was gay, and the world didn't need to know. I was gay when I was on holidays. Hawaii was wonderful. I was deeply locked in the closet as a professional accountant, and I knew my life would be turned upside down. about in 1980 at that one, as I went up that escalator to that first meeting, the person beside me had their badge and their name was showing, and they were from my hometown, which was about an hour and a half from where I was living, and they were gay. And he said, come with me. And he sat me in the second or third row, and there you all were. And I was crying, and I was crying, and I was bawling. I had never been in a room full of gays. I had been in the edge of some clubs and other places. I had a friend for when I went home. In the gay hospitality suite in Montreal, I was sitting there. And a fella I had known for at least 10 years, maybe longer. And I'd sat in the back so I could keep an eye on who was coming in. I was on a charter. I didn't want them to know at that point. This guy walks in, unbeknownst to me. He came from the side or something. And he said, Heywood, so glad to see you. And I looked up. There was a fellow that had been on the charter with me. He worked for politicians. We had long, long talk, and we went to the dance together, the off-site dance. Eye-openers, eye-openers. Crying, crying, crying. Well, I was a baller. That same guy, I gave him his 20-year cake some 5 or 6 years later in Edmonton, Alberta. I also, this is an aside, but I also had dinner with, we were standing in line to get into the big meeting and it was too early. And there was somebody with a gay tag on, so the two of us went for lunch or for supper. Wow, I could talk to some people. Wow. And they weren't in clubs. Upside down. There was one more thing I had to do before I left Montreal. If I was ever to come out of the closet, that was the time. I took there were two past trusted servants, trustees, on the plane. So when we were at the airport, I had made up my mind, and I took each one aside and said, I'm gay. I'm going home to find that gay meeting in Saskatoon. Those were the first people I likely ever told that I was gay. They were wonderful friends. One was a bit, which I knew when I said it. To confirm this, I got hold of the other person who is still alive, and I mentioned coming here, and I'd been asked to share. And Al said to me at that time, he said, I remember our conversation. He didn't say whether he was surprised or not. I didn't ask him. He just said he remembered the conversation. So that's why I'm repeating it today. So that was my coming out. I went home. I found that gay group. I traveled a lot. Edmonton, Calgary, Vancouver, Winnipeg. And I had all these new friends in rooms just like this. And I tell those story. Not, it may not apply to everybody here. We're much easier coming out nowadays than there was. But maybe there's something else that's eating at us. We have to deal with it. Life has been so much better. 4 years later, I moved to Edmonton with a new job. It took a while to get the job so that I wasn't out of work. I did not want to be out of work. And in Edmonton, I met a man. He is here with me today. Marvin and I have been together for just over 25 years. We've grown old together. We met in 1989, and the first AA thing I dragged him to was Seattle for the big conference, the International. He loves these internationals. We had debated a long time about whether we'd come to this one. We're getting a little older, as I keep saying. We're delighted we're here. And I've got 16 seconds to finish up. And this little piece of paper fell out of my bookcase when I was pulling out some of my books the other day when I was preparing this. I'll say it. It must have fallen out for a reason. Happiness is gratitude for the miracle which granted another go-around to a life once abandoned. That was from Came to Believe, page 112, written by Bill W. I'm sure that came out for a reason. Thank you ever so much. You're a wonderful crowd.
And now I'd like to welcome Gina from California.
Good morning. My name is Gina B, and I am an alcoholic. Do we have a translator in here today? No, I was going to apologize in advance. I talk fast. I've only got 20 minutes, and I've got a lot to do up here. Okay. You know, I was talking to Haywood this morning and Ron, too, and I was sharing the same sentiment that the amount of gratitude to just be here is overwhelming. What an amazing opportunity. Thank you for helping keep me sober. Thank you, everybody. Thank you for letting me be here. Welcome to the newcomers. Oh, my God. If you guys are new here, woo! This is crazy great. I'm sure, I remember when I was new, it was hard enough just to go into a room with like 5 people, much less this room. So if you're here, it's like kudos, super kudos. And if you're here, you're not sure if you belong here or not, get a sponsor, start doing the steps, read the book. I talk louder. I've actually never been asked to speak louder. But I heard you. Thank you. Wow. Oh, my goodness. So if you are new here, thank you for being an Alcoholics Anonymous. Thank you for being here to carry on this legacy. Thank you for being here to help save somebody else's life when they walk through the door. And if you're not sure you belong here, stay here long enough, work a step, get a sponsor, read the book. The program that I have done that helps me not drink today is contained within the book of Alcoholics Anonymous. That's it. I say lots of stuff up here, and it's like the world according to Gina. It's not Alcoholics Anonymous. So it's just my opinion of what I've been through, really. And thank you. Thank you so much for being here. I first got sober and stayed sober finally when I was 17. My sobriety date is January 1st, 1990. What a weird ride it was in the very beginning. See, I didn't actually know that I was getting sober. I started going to meetings because there was nothing really else to do and everybody else recognized it. And they were like, hey, why don't you go to these meetings? And I'm like, really? You guys are alcoholics? I'm pretty much a dope fiend. That's what I thought at the time. And I said, I don't know if I really belong there. Besides, it's my mom's fault. And what ended up happening is I started going to these Alcoholics Anonymous meetings, and you guys were like really lovey and touchy. And I was like, yeah, I'm not sure if I need to, don't touch me. And so I would keep going to these Alcoholics Anonymous meetings. And for about the first year is what really happened, is I sat here in these meetings and I was like, I don't know if I belong here and I don't get this thing and I want it so bad. And I'd take the book and I'd try to take it home and like translate for myself. And it wasn't working because the Book of Alcoholics Anonymous is not very alcoholic friendly. That's why we have sponsors to translate. So what happened is I would sit in parks and I would read and I'd be like, oh my God, why did I get this? God, I don't know. I want to drink and I'm miserable. And I don't know what happened, but somewhere in the middle of all that, finally, I started doing something in Alcoholics Anonymous, right? People said, hey, we need a secretary. Why don't you be a secretary? I'm like, okay, I'll be a secretary. Why don't you wash these ashtrays? Okay, everybody was smoking like freight trains. Okay, I'll wash all these ashtrays because there were lots of them. Why don't you? And at the time in my fellowship, I was in Jackson, California. And what they said was, oh, we've got kids here. You're close to their age. Can you babysit for the meeting? And I'm like, okay. What do I know? I'm being a service. we need to paint the hall. Show up. And they'd be like, hey, we're going to do this big gala thing for Christmas. It's going to be wonderful. It's going to be potluck and bingo. And why don't you come? I'm like, yeah, it's really not my 18-year-old's old. Nah, I'm not really good. Bring potato salad. What? I'm like, how am I getting roped into these things? These people aren't listening. We're going swimming at the river. We're going to meet at 10. We're going to do, I don't have a bathing suit. Yeah, she does. You can borrow hers. No. And they would pick me up anyways. And they started showing me this fellowship thing, right? And they bring me into the fold and they start showing me how they're living. They start showing me how they're doing these things like going to the grocery store in the river and hanging out with each other. And they're drinking coffee and they're at late, way into the wee hours of the next day. And they're not drinking. And I thought, maybe I can stay here. So I started doing more. And then I started doing hospitals and institutions work. I started going to the women's facility, the jail, the juvenile detention facility, CYAs. I started going to Preston and Mule Creek and all these. And it was great. And I was doing all this service work. And I was so wrapped up. And then I got this two-bedroom house. And it had two rooms. And they said, oh, my God, you need a roommate. And I said, no, I don't. She doesn't have a place to live. And I went, okay, service. So we move another alcoholic dolphin in my house. And so we're all sober and young and crazy. And she's living with me and we're doing things. And I'm like 3.5 years sober. And I put a shotgun in my mouth because I was doing all this stuff in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I hadn't worked the steps yet. See, I was being of service to you and to the group. And I was hanging out and I was really good at hanging out. And I was really good at coffee, and I was really good at making potato salad. Or at least buying it. And I had a sponsor who I really wasn't really any... I've got one. She's over. I don't know what her phone number is. And I kept getting up to, one, two, three, shuffle back to... One, two, three, shuffle back to... And what I fast forward come to realize is I got to the third step and I wanted to turn my will and my life over to the care of my higher power as I understood that higher power. And you see, and my God could have everything. My God could have all parts of me. My God could have my family. My God could have my alcoholism. My God could have my job because that was a pain in the butt. So I was gladly given most of that stuff. My God could have my roommate. My God could have my cute little kitties. My God could have everything in my life, but there was just this one piece, and I didn't know, because what if I wrote it down when I did my four step and it came, and I had to start talking about it, and I don't know how to be gay. So what would happen if I actually wrote a four step and it came out that maybe somebody, what? I might be, I can't do that. I don't know if I can do this. What is gay? I don't know if I can be gay. And I was so scared to death because I could not give that to my God. I was so frightened. I didn't even know what it was. I didn't know. I'd been growing up my whole life. I was 12 years old. My mom said, are you gay? And I'm like, no, what? I don't know. No. Hands on the hip. Hands on the hip, walking away, scratching my head. What's gay? What's gay? I don't even know what gay is. When I was drinking, I didn't have time for anybody. Male, female, cats, dogs, doesn't matter. I didn't have time for you because I was drinking. And so what happened is I didn't pay attention to anything except for alcohol. When I got sober, I started thawing out and all the feelers started happening. Right? And so I was starting to come to. And the more I worked with my God, the more I worked with my higher power, the more I worked with you, the more you guys encouraged me to find out who I was and to dig deeper and to dig deeper. And God, you want me to dig deeper some more? What? The more that I was here, the longer that I was here, and the more I wanted to stay sober, to be and stay sober, I knew I had to keep doing the work. And that day when I put the shotgun in my mouth, I said, God, I don't know if I can stay here because I don't know how to be gay. I don't know what that's going to mean to my family. I don't know what that's going to mean to my friends. My fellowship, Jesus, we're in the middle of the foothills. Everybody has a gun in the rack in the back of their truck, you know, glass, and they with a fishing pole. And you know, and I was, and I just didn't know what it meant for me. And I had this idea. My God got me sober. And my God says, you can do anything just today. You can do anything you want to just today. You can come here. You can be here. Why don't you try walking in those shoes for just a minute? And I was like, in this internal conversation, you know, I can still taste the gunmetal in my mouth. You know, and I was like, all right, God, here's what we'll do. I'll walk in those shoes for a minute and I'll see if they fit. Because I didn't even know if I really was or not. I didn't know if I was just crazy or, well, I knew I was crazy. I mean, a different kind of crazy. And so what happened is I put those Doc Martens on and I actually never, ever took them off. Yeah. Yeah. And I just totally got gayed out. It's like I found my sponsor, and it was the most conservative sponsor in the history of the planet as far as I was concerned at the moment. And I said, yes, and I didn't say anything in my four steps still. I was like the whole holdup was, and I still didn't say anything. But what happened is I started changing my attitude and my outlook towards life. And I started seeking out people that, you know, water seeks its own level. And here I was seeking my own level. And I found out that there were gay groups. What? And then I found a lesbian meeting. So I went into the big city of Sacramento, an hour away from where I was living. And my sister is a lesbian as well. And she was living down in the Sacramento area. And she had a girlfriend. And her girlfriend was in Alcoholics Anonymous. And she goes, we have gay meetings. There's a woman's meeting. You come down here. And I'm like, I was scared. Oh, my God. What's this going to be like? So I went out and I bought a baseball cap right away and got rainbow rings to put on. And I put my boots on and got gayed out. And so I show up to this women's meeting and there's all these sober lesbians. I'm like, that's it. I'm in heaven. This is great. Oh my God. And I have found my people, right? And I got involved, and that was the North Hall Group of Alcoholics Anonymous in Sacramento, California. There we go. And so that is my home, and my other home away from home is the SACIPAW Group of Alcoholics Anonymous in Sacramento. That is the Sacramento Young People in Alcoholics Anonymous. And, yeah, so those are my two homes. Yes, I have a home group. It's those two. Yeah. So what happened was, is after I did that, I was finally saying, okay, God, you can have this thing. And it's okay now. When I started to become more comfortable, and it was a little difficult, but it was okay. But most of the people were like, I was like, Mom, I have to tell you about, she goes, yeah, I know you're gay. And my grandma, oh my God, I went to my grandmother and I said, Grandma, I have to tell you something. We sat her down and she goes, who died? I'm like, no, nobody died. She goes, you're gay. And I was like, why? Why does everybody know but me? So Alcoholics Anonymous saved my life twice, really. And even more than that, really, because it continues to save my life. Special interest groups. I mean, my two home group are special interest groups. That doesn't mean I don't go to any other meetings. I go to other meetings outside of those groups as well. But I also know and understand the need for and the desire for other people in Alcoholics Anonymous to find those groups. To be a person, a gay and lesbian alcoholic or whatever, transgender, queer, dyke, I don't, whatever the label or non-label that you choose, if you're in this room, you belong. You know, I am an alcoholic. And when I come into the meetings in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, I want to hear about your solution with my problem with alcohol. I want to hear about how you guys are living your lives, how you guys are walking through your days not strangling people. And not drinking, too. Well, you know, there's that thing. You know, I have alcoholism in my family. My mother, I do believe she qualified for this thing, and she died as a direct result of it. You know, I watched my mother die. I mean, I've had so many people in my life die from this disease. I come here. There's a sense of there's joy. There's such joy in here. Because I know we hear this all the time, but we are not a glum lot. If I could find no joy and happiness, if I could not find any freedom, if I could not find any identification, if I could not find something that makes me want to keep coming back here, I would not stay here. But it talks about underneath there's a very seriousness about this whole thing. Because we do die of alcoholism. We do die of alcoholism. And I don't want to die of alcoholism if I can help it. So I keep coming back here so I continue to hear the message from you guys. You guys can remind me of it. So I can go, oh, yeah, I'm an alcoholic. Do something. You know, I hear a lot about the time, you know, just don't drink. And I want to say this because this is like, remember Gina's opinion about alcoholics. Just don't drink is killing people. And I love the like-mindedness of a lot of the people I hang around with, too. I mean, in the book it talks about, you know what, come here now, do something. Here's some steps. Do some. I am not perfect. I am really far from it. Ask my wife. I do just about as little as I can to get by in this program on some days because I'm a lazy bastard, because I'm an alcoholic. I want to do just enough to get the best results I can get without doing anything extra. And so what happens is it says, talks about action in this thing. Sometimes I'm really good at it. Sometimes I suck at it. But what I do know is that every day I get to do this thing over again, I get another opportunity to do some more maybe that day, or just enough maybe for that day, or really not quite enough, but maybe I should do it different the next day. But see, I get that chance every day. Every day in my life was the end of the world when I was drinking. I thought I was going to die. I woke up in the morning and it hurt to breathe. I woke up in the morning and I didn't think that I could walk through another day because my alcoholism was killing me inside and telling me I was a worthless piece of crap that didn't deserve to be on this planet. What happens is I came to Alcoholics Anonymous and you can say, no. You get to be here. You're worth staying here and you can get another chance to do it different if you want to, just one day at a time. And so I've been able to do that. I've been able to stay here and not take a drink and hopefully pass this thing on to other people. But like I said, you know, doing something is the key, not just not drinking. That's great, but alcohol is not just my problem. My problem is this thing, the thing centered between my two ears. I have this huge, I'm self-centered and selfish. I want my way, I want it now, I want it when I want it, and I want yours on top of it. And what happens is, if I'm not doing something, if I'm not working the steps, if you were not here to remind me, you're full of you know what, and just a lot of the times, I forget that, and I get out of control, and I have massive ego and pride, and then it becomes self-pity when I don't want what I want. God, an alcoholic in his cups is an unlovely creature. So I have to do something here in Alcoholics Anonymous, even if it is just washing an ashtray, or a coffee cup, or watching the kids, or painting the hall, to begin with, doing something, something to jumpstart this thing. I spent 3.5 years here not doing the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, and what it did is I didn't drink, I kept doing things in between, until I could finally get to a place where I could do something here in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous as far as the program went, the 12 steps. You know, I had to not drink and do something to get to that part. You know, so I have judgment. I'm horrible. I'm like, they ain't doing it right. And see, and they use the wrong term, recovered, recovering. I have recovered. Pickery. Whatever the word I use, I know the principle behind it. I know the feeling behind it. I know the meaning behind it. I know what we're talking about. And I stand here with that daily reprieve because I got a God in my life. And because you guys continue to hold me up, I can't do this by myself. It would be a really crappy day if I went to an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting and nobody else was there, because I won't stay sober that way. That's why I absolutely need you. Every single body that walks the door of Alcoholics Anonymous, I am not going to get all kumbaya and love everybody, because it's not going to happen. Because I'm a human being and I have my fallible, you know, my little personal defects and all those other things. But I absolutely love you. And I would do anything within the possibilities that I have in my power to help another alcoholic. If they don't want to drink today, come see me. I'll do anything I can. I am responsible. And I am responsible doesn't necessarily mean that I'm going to do it personally, because I might be responsible for the group as a whole to enable somebody else to do it for you. But I want to be a part of this thing, and I want to continue to be a part of this thing, because Alcoholics Anonymous is great and it's wonderful. And to think that there's just a few guys that got together in the beginning of this gig, some lady introduced them and said, "You guys need to talk to each other." And they're like, "All right, what are we going to talk about? I'll give this guy 5 minutes, then I'm out." And then it brings us to this place. That is amazing. And I have so much respect for Alcoholics Anonymous. I don't know how much more it's going to change just in the next 7 days, much less how many years we hopefully have for this thing. But I love the changes I see here, even when they're not the changes that I want to see. You know, Alcoholics Anonymous has enabled me to be at least spiritually fit enough to find somebody I love and to have that person say, "Yeah, I'll stay with you." So I have my wife of 2 years. We just celebrated 2 years married. Whoop, whoop. Not as long as 25, man. And I have a 2-year-old son. We have a 2-year-old son together. If you guys want to see pictures, just see me after the meeting. I don't know, I might be able to find some. You know, but because I'm a sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous, I have a peace and a freedom today. When I wake up in the morning, it no longer hurts to breathe. I'm grumpy a lot of days. But I know where the answers are at. And I do. I have this freedom. And I can walk around this planet and I know it's okay for me to be here. And I know I have a solution. And when I screw up, I know I have steps to take me back, and I can hopefully take the proper steps to clean up any messes that I have created. I know I get that chance to continue to do it over and hopefully do it different. Hopefully better. Sometimes I do it worse the next time. But I get a chance to do it even again. And I'm grateful because you guys all taught me that. Everybody in Alcoholics Anonymous has taught me that. And I really am grateful to the LGBT, you know, meeting hall that I found when I was at 4 years sober. Because, I mean, there was such an excitement and there was this fervor, this great just joy that I found when I found my people. I mean, I had that joy when I found Alcoholics Anonymous, when I finally figured out I was getting sober. And then when I found that gaze on top of it, it was like, this is like the ice cream I had been eating now had whipped cream on top. So, you know, in closing, I really want to say what an honor it has been to be up here, to be allowed to participate in this conference, to be sitting up here with these fine gentlemen, to be even be asked, even be considered, to even to be considered to be up here is an honor beyond measure. And I'm grateful for my life in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I'm grateful for you. And I hope that everybody has an amazing conference. Thank you so much.
And now I'd like to introduce Ron from Georgia.
My name is Ron Hutchison, and I am an alcoholic. I like to say my last name when I'm in an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting, because I had a sponsor. Some of you may have heard of her. It's Gay G. Gay Garner. She used her last name. She's no longer with us. But she said, "We can be so anonymous in Alcoholics Anonymous that when somebody needs help, they can't find us." So here I am. My sobriety date is April 27th, 1984. My coming out date was actually somewhere in May of 1970. And I remember it very well. I was at the University of Georgia, party school. And the gay community there each spring had a special party that they invited people from the area and from the school that they thought might be gay. I got an invitation. I went to that party with a fifth of bourbon, and because I was drinking at the time, obviously. And as the party went on, I was drinking, you know, just normally drinking. As the party went on, people started pairing up. I said, "My, what am I going to do?" Because I had a dilemma. I had a decision to make. Am I going to accept myself for being who I am, or am I going to be someone that I'm not? And that day I accepted myself for being who I am, for the most part. It took a lot of work, but today I'm okay with being gay. I'm okay with it today. But at that party, I went into the kitchen when I saw people pairing up, and I found the biggest glass I could find. And I poured what was left of the bourbon in that glass and drank it. And then I told somebody that I was gay. And that's how I came out. But I continued drinking for quite a while. But my drinking took on purpose in 1975. I know exactly when I crossed the line. But let me back up for one moment to address the topic. The topic says gay alcoholic or alcoholic who happens to be gay. I'm both, because I was born this way. I was born an alcoholic, and I was born gay. And there's nothing I can do about either one of them. But my drinking took on purpose in 1975. And I got sober in 1984 after 9 years of drinking at home by myself, drinking a half gallon of scotch a day, and unplugging my telephones, not knowing where my mailbox was for 3 years. I didn't know. Every time that I got mail, I don't know where it went. The way that I would pay bills is I would wait until I would think the electricity was about to be turned off. Then I would go to the place to pay the bill, and they'd ask me always, "Do you have your bill?" I said, "No, I lost it." I lost a lot of things. But I did that for 9 years. And then on April the 23rd of 1984, which was a Monday evening, it was my mother's birthday. And I plugged in my telephones to give her a call to wish her a happy birthday. And I realized that day that my mother died in 1985. And it still hurts today. But I will try. I have a soft voice anyway. People tell me I should be an NPR person. But that night on April 23rd, I called Alcoholics Anonymous. And the person that answered the phone at the central office, I heard her say, "Hey, Don, we've got a live one here." So Don got on the phone and talked to me for a few minutes. He said, "We don't usually talk to people as drunk as you are, but we'll make an exception." So they did, and I'm glad they did. But they told me to call a treatment center because I was drinking so much they didn't know what to do with me. So I called a treatment center that night and played telephone tag with the nurse. I kept giving her little pieces of information. I'd hang up. Then I'd tell her something else when I'd call back, and I'd hang up. But also, the reason that I knew to call Alcoholics Anonymous that night is because I'd seen the movie Days of Wine and Roses. That's the reason I knew to call. But I got sober, and my first sponsor made me work steps. I had no choice. I said, but there are suggestions. He said, yeah, but they say must. So I believed him. So I did what he told me to do. He was a retired naval commander. And just grumpy as he could be. And he would tell me what to do, when to do, and how to do it. And that's exactly what I needed as a sponsor at that time. I needed somebody to tell me because I didn't know. I remember going to the grocery store and standing in front of the toothpaste. And I was wondering what God's will for me was to which toothpaste to buy. So I went to the back of the store where the pay telephones were because we didn't have cell phones then. And I used a dime and I called my sponsor. He said, God doesn't care what toothpaste you buy. And I think I said, did you ask him? But today, I could go on with stories like that about my early sobriety. My first sponsor and I tried to rewrite the steps. We were going to make it an all-inclusive program that could solve every problem that there is to be solved, overeating, all of it. So we started rewriting the steps, and Gay Garner pulled me aside and said, are you sure you want to do that? And I didn't know what to say to her. So I said, I don't know. But that sponsor got drunk, and I didn't, because I listened to Gay, and I started going to meetings where the steps were talked about, where the big book was talked about, and that's what kept me sober. And today, I don't even think about the steps a lot, because they're so much a part of my life, because that's how I want it to be. One of the things that I ask my people who ask me to sponsor them is, do you want Alcoholics Anonymous to fit into your life, or do you want your life to fit into Alcoholics Anonymous? And I want my life in Alcoholics Anonymous is where I want it. I don't want Alcoholics Anonymous in my life. But today, I have gratitude in my heart, and I've been told that if I have gratitude in my heart, more than likely I'm going to stay sober. And I believe that today. And my mother, she died. I accept that. Like I said, it still hurts. But in sobriety, I've also seen my father pass away and my brother. So I have, the only family I have is me and you and my partner and his family. My partner and I have been together for about 28 years. Not all good times. But for me, those are the growing times. Because as it says in the 12 and 12, pain is a touchstone of all spiritual growth. And I believe that. So when pain comes into my life, I do what it says on page 130 to 133. I capitalize on it as an opportunity for God to demonstrate his omnipotence. And that's why I stay sober today, by relying on God. Because God's going to take care of me if I do what the program teaches me to do. I believe that with all my heart today and with all my soul. And I'm just really grateful that I was asked to do this. You know, you would think that I wouldn't be nervous doing this, but I am. I'm very nervous. And because I was a high school principal. So I should be used to talking to people. And I am, but not 1,000 people. I mean, when I saw this room, I said, oh my goodness, what have I gotten myself into? And what I've gotten myself into is staying sober one more day. And that's what this whole program is about. That's what this whole conference is about, is staying sober one more day. And with your help and with the help of God and the help of my sponsor, I will do that. Thank you.
Wrap up. We have a few minutes, and we will be able to have a few people share in a moment. But I wanted to share, if some of you may not know or have not had the opportunity to learn more about the history of gay people and Alcoholics Anonymous, there's lots of material out there. You know, I got sober in the Greenwich Village group in New York, and I got to go back a couple of years ago, and most of the people in the room were my grandchildren's age. But I happened to get sober there, and there were many people in that group that had been around in the very early days of Alcoholics Anonymous. And they told stories, and they told stories about people like Marty M. and Barry L. and Bill H. Going to Bill and saying, you know, we think we need to have some special meetings for people who are gay. And Bill kind of, you know, rubbed his chin and said, well, I don't know about that. What do you think? And they were like, we think we need to do this. And Bill said, well, go think about it for, I think he said, a year, and then come back and we'll talk again. And, of course, when they went back, Bill said, well, if it's going to keep you sober, go do it. And then there were a lot, all of those people began to evolve what we now know to be Alcoholics Anonymous for gay people. They would never have imagined a room like this. Also, for those of you that remember Nell, who was Bill's secretary, and she was the first archivist in Alcoholics Anonymous, the second archivist excuse me, was Frank M. And Frank was gay. There was no question about that. He was the archivist there for many, many years until he died of AIDS. And when he died, it's the first and the only time I've ever known of a little obituary being in there about somebody that wasn't Bill or Bob, about him. And it's all as a reminder that we've been here all along. You know, there's lots of us now, and we're kind of obvious. And even the Supreme Court notices that we're here. But we've been drunk and we've been gay even before the Supreme Court noticed. The other thing I wanted to share before we kind of take some voices beyond ours is that for those of you that are not aware, GALA, Gays and Lesbians in Alcoholics Anonymous, which is inclusive of everybody, no matter, as Haywood said, whatever the initials, does have a hospitality suite here in the Westin, thank you, on the 10th floor. And then tonight is the dance, also in the Westin. They will be, there may be some gay people there. And the tickets for that will be sold up here right after the meeting, so that just so you kind of know where the flow is gonna go. And now we'll take a few folks to share and ask everybody to keep it brief. Please come on up.
Get it.
I'm Doug. I'm an alcoholic, and this my sobriety date is February 18th, 1984. And this is my fifth world convention, and I have the urge to, through God, to speak for the first time. I'm in a rural mountain in Pennsylvania, and I wanted to say I love Alcoholics Anonymous. It has made me who I am today. I came in the program not knowing and having a huge gay issue as a young kid. I came in right after high school, and a person told me that there's another young gentleman in our area that's your age, and he became my partner of 30 years. And I just wanted to share for the first time to everybody in the public, everyone here today. I don't have no coming out date where rural Pennsylvania mountains are. There's just not much of an area, but I want to thank everyone and God for giving Doug who I am today. Because as a young child, I had a disaster. There was no high school for me, nothing much, and identifying myself as being gay was atrocious to me. It was unbelievable. But for the life that I've had for the last 31 years, all I can say for a message today is I have dreamed of having the tools on how to live for Douglas, for me. And Alcoholics Anonymous and the 12 Steps has given me a life beyond not quitting before the miracle happens. I just want to thank everybody for the 2 minutes that I have said for me that I want to thank the old-timers that loved me when I had no family when I came in, got me a checkbook, and bought me a white Nova when I was 1 year sober, and it rained inside as well as out in Scranton, Pennsylvania. And I thought to myself, I needed the love of those old-timers. For my dear people, my old sponsor would say after 43 years, Douglas, you'll have a life beyond your wildest imagination. Thank you to the old-timers for giving Douglas the best life I could have. Thank you.
Hi, guys. I'm Alexander, and I'm an alcoholic. I forgot to say hi, girls, too. And I've been in the fellowship since September 2004. I've been dry, I would say, since October 2004. But I didn't get sober until December 2012. And in my sobriety, my dryness, I dived under a train. I took it one step further than Gina. I actually did a swan dive in good gay style. Drama. Make sure the station is packed and dive. And fortunately in London, because so many people commit suicide by jumping in front of a train, they actually have a suicide trench. So so you generally get cut up. Fortunately, I didn't. And I shared yesterday at the Western, I did lie a bit. I said I got run over by 4 cars. I actually got run over by 2 cars, a train, and a truck. And the train was because I was dry and I wasn't sober and I was in so much pain. It really, really, really hurt. And I just wanted those feelings to go. And then after diving under the train, absolutely nothing happened. I got a helicopter ride, and that was the excitement. But, you know, when I eventually crashed down on my knees and let go and let God, because for me it's all about that, accepting who I am. I used to be a dentist. My brain injury makes me shake so much it would be like a chainsaw massacre now. I'm being told to shut up. I like the sound of my voice too much. But guys, just let go and let God.
One more and then we're going to close up.
My name is Frank. I'm an alcoholic. I'm grateful to be here. I'm grateful to be sober. My sobriety date is April 23rd, 1982. And for one day at a time, I haven't had to pick up a drink. I always tell people, if I die right here, right now, I've had an awesome life because of Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, but what I wanted to share about today is I was on a shuttle bus this morning, and I was with some people who were coming to this convention, and they were talking about going to some different churches or different things. And one of the ladies said to the other lady, you know, we don't deal with any homosexuality there or, you know, any abortion, you know. So I just said to her, excuse me, thank God for Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm Frank, and I'm gay, and I'm an alcoholic. I said, AA was the first place that welcomed us in America. And that was a long time ago. Thank God for that. But my message is that we have to be, my sponsor told me right in the beginning of sobriety, she's been my sponsor for 31 years, but she told me right in the beginning, you have to have the courage of your convictions. You know, there's a long time in my life I would have sat there and said nothing to those people. But they need to know we're here. You know, we're here, we're queer, and we ain't going nowhere. Thank you.